It's the ABCs High School Teachers Really Need to Know, Season 2, Episode 19, Strive for Student Ownership. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe, or buy the books on Amazon.com. It is good to be with you here on this week, and I hope everything is great in your world. I know I say that every week, but I truly do hope that you are just knocking it out, and we're just having a fantastic spring here in the classroom. And I hope that your kids are learning and you are growing and getting better every day. That's the hope of just every one of us, right? Just to get better. This week's episode is called Strive for Student Ownership. Now, I want to caution you a little bit as I kind of get into this because, I've said this to you before, but I have such an adverse reaction when people say that a classroom needs to be this way or that way. All the time. It just really, because it starts convincing us that we're not as good as maybe other teachers, and that may or may not be true, but I just don't like teachers, and I don't like feeling this way, and you don't either, and that's that you feel like you have to go home and blow up your process because, your classroom's lesser than or nowhere near some of these quote-unquote experts that can, flip the classroom and as I always say, look like every lesson belongs to Good Morning America. For us mere mortals, that's just not a realistic thing, right? So we do the best we can to, make our kids learn in a variety of different ways and as often as possible using a portfolio of different strategies and approaches. And I just think that's the best approach and being intentional. So when I talk about striving for student ownership, all of us here have heard ownership and we've talked about that and related jargon, and not only in these episodes, but I'm sure in PDs and all these other things that you've been a part of. So I just kind of want to preface this episode by saying that, right? Because I don't want you to feel like, man, I need to go home and just completely blow up my process or, because I'm no good, I'm nowhere near that, because that's not what it's about. It's about taking and adapting and being intentional about getting better as often as we possibly can. So this week's episode is indeed about student ownership. And again, we've heard a lot of different conversations, I'm sure, on ownership and a lot of different definitions. The one that I'm really looking, I guess, to build from is one that is from the National Institutes for Excellence in Teaching. And they have a lot of good stuff, a lot of theory, and I know a lot of us kind of, thumb our nose at that. But I think there's a lot of practical information here as well. But I am using their definition of student ownership. I'm actually going to read it to you from them. It's when students own their learning. So student ownership is when students own their learning. They know how to apply what they are learning in different contexts and take responsibility for their progress and success. Student ownership is evident when students can articulate what they are learning, why they are learning it, strategies that support their learning, and how they will use these strategies in the future. And some of you may, again, point your nose in the air for a variety of different reasons at that definition, but I think this is a really important definition because, and this is the working definition I'm going to talk about in this episode, because I think, in a nutshell, this puts students in the best place to learn. I really do. When student ownership exists in a classroom, I think kids are more inclined because they're connected with the classroom and they are able to, they're more motivated and they can, succeed in a variety of different ways beyond just what the teacher, him or herself, has kind of laid out for them. And we'll talk about that. But I think student ownership is important. And another reason some of you may have kind of been turned off to this definition or others that you've heard before is because you're like, well, now how, if I teach elementary school, How is an elementary student supposed to know how to apply or articulate what they are learning? Well, let me say this to you first. This definition is applicable to all types of learners in all grades, and it's important. For example, if you're teaching an elementary lesson on milk from cows, why is it important that you get milk? You can apply that at an elementary level. They can begin to articulate those things. What is a cow? Is a cow an animal, a plant? There's all kinds of different applications that I know because I've seen it. And so this definition is not exclusive to, say, middle and high school teachers alone. And I know this is a podcast specifically aimed at secondary teachers, but if you do happen to teach elementary, or you're needing to understand kind of further why student ownership is important across the spectrum of learning, K through 12, but also and beyond, but also across the different types of learning, that's a great explanation as to why it is. I mean, colors can be applicable and are applicable to our lives and so forth and so forth. So even at the basic, which seemingly the most rudimentary type of learning, student ownership is so important. And so, and again, I know that that's a little bit in the weeds. And it sounds a lot like theory, but I'm going to bring it back to the classroom because student ownership has to be present in classrooms. And again, don't go home and blow up your process. It's about being more intentional about making sure that, kids are able to, develop through student ownership, and your classroom is about student ownership and students taking the lead as opposed to that passive seat in their own learning where they're just simply not going to learn as much. And so student ownership, absolutely crucial. Now, one thing that I will tell you, I think that a lot of times student ownership sort of, so that happens with this discussion is it gets hijacked a little bit with the word engagement. And I can't tell you enough how different those two are. And a lot of you will nod your head yes when I make this statement. Just because a class, a group of students is busy, they're quote unquote engaged, that doesn't mean they're learning anything. Just because they're busy and engaged in their learning, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Now, sometimes it can be true, and a lot of times I think you can probably say more often than not that engaged students certainly are going to learn more than students who are not engaged. I think that's kind of obvious. But when we talk about student ownership, it's really about going beyond engagement and going, as I just kind of read that definition to you, going to the application level, going to where students are more empowered and in control of kind of where the learning may go. And I know that's a little disarming because we, being teachers, we want to control, right? It's a little bit easier to, it's a lot easier to control, if we're being honest, from the standpoint of managing a classroom. But you really do have to strive to empower your kids and let them innovate and let them sort of take it and run with it. I'm a believer, as you know, in essential questions, asking those foundational ideas, and then letting kids kind of build on those things. I'm just an absolute proponent. Those essential questions can be your standards, your benchmarks, whatever they may be, but you have to build in exploration time, and that's so important. And so what we're really talking about here, and I know I'm kind of going point to point kind of quickly here, what I'm really talking about is a classroom where kids are truly at the center and they're not just simply passengers in your process. They're engaged and they're motivated a lot more. Maybe they're not 100% motivated, but they're certainly more motivated otherwise in a process that's driven 100% by the teacher. And so again, if you truly believe in that idea of being a facilitator in a process sort of on its way to generating kids that are motivated and excited about learning, I think that I think you've got to buy into this process and this idea of student ownership. So how exactly do you do that? And again, I don't want to ramble on for hours and hours and hours about this. I could. This is one of those things that I'm very passionate about. And so I could ramble. But I just want to plant a few seeds for you today and let you kind of work through those things in your mind and begin to, test and try things in the classroom. And I always say, win the day with one student at a time or one assignment at a time. Don't go home and blow up your process. Also, don't be, and this is what I was saying at the top of the episode, don't be fooled into believing that I believe that student ownership is going to create this utopian classroom. Again, that's why I get so tired of quote unquote experts, as I've already said, telling me we need to do this or we need to do that, because nothing works all the time. I spoke, in the last episode about how a lesson can be bad, no matter if it reaches the majority of learners, because if it misses even one in the mindset of that person, it's a bad lesson, even though it may have been a great lesson, right? And so nothing is perfect. And so just because you create a rich environment filled with student ownership doesn't mean that you will always reach all kinds of learners and you'll get them to this utopian level of, teacher student, and all of a sudden we're killing it and crushing it. But you're more apt to reach more people, more learners this way. Not to mention, you're going to create an atmosphere that is more fun, more authentic, and just a better place to generate learners in general. So I think it just increases your ability to be successful. And I think that's where effective teachers really live. So let's talk about, generating this culture, this classroom that is about student ownership. And it's going to start with you never asking a couple of questions. Now, I kind of wrote these down, so bear with me. I'm going to read them to you. Never ask these questions. And I say never, but these are just kind of the wrong questions we focus on. And I actually have presented these to a lot of teachers. It's from a culmination of a lot of research that I've done, not to mention the empirical research from having been in the classroom along with so many other teachers for all these years. So I just want you to think about these questions and why you ask them. So try not to focus on these questions. How do I get my students to follow all the rules and directions? Why don't we as teachers focus on that? How do I get students to turn in all their assignments? How do I get students to study more for tests? How do I get my students to make A's in my class? Well, all of those questions, I'm gonna just read them again. How do I get students to follow all the rules and directions? How do I get students to turn in all their assignments? How do I get students to study more for tests? And how do I get students to make an A on assignments or in class? Well, why do you say, Matt, that these are the wrong questions that we focus on? Well, the bottom line is none of these questions have anything to do with learning, and they don't move the needle for learning very much. They just don't, if at all. This is not about learning. Nothing about A's or rules and directions or getting them to study more really is about learning how to do this or how to do that, or how to master this concept or that concept. None of that has anything to do with these questions. And so these don't move the needle. Instead, you as a teacher should be focusing on the right questions. For example, how do I get students to move beyond compliance and grades? How do you get them to focus on learning? How do I get my students to better relate and find meaning in my content? Isn't that a great question? How do I get students to care and be motivated about my content? How do I get students to see the clear picture of what they are learning and why they're learning it? How do I get students to be more confident in their ability to succeed or achieve? How do I get students to want to take their learning to the next level? That's that application. See, if we lived as teachers more on these questions, these are just much better questions. I'm going to read them to you again. So some of the right questions: how do I get students to move beyond compliance and grades? How do I get my students to better relate and find meaning in my content? Why am I learning what I'm learning? How do I get students to see the clear picture of what and why they're learning it? How do I get students to be more confident? Eliminating learned helplessness. How do I get them to be more confident that they can succeed? And how do I get students to want to take their learning to the next level? How do they, not just simply succeed at the minimum level, but to go to the next level? And so it starts, the creating an ownership culture starts around that right there. You've got to start focusing on the right questions. Focus on the learning and the content, the why, as opposed to the nuts and bolts of your structure and your process and rules and how do I get an A? You've got to get away from that if you want your kids to succeed. And if you do, you're going to see some magic, I'm telling you. Some things that I think are really, really important for you to kind of think about when you're sort of establishing an ownership culture. I think there's a couple of things that have to work. I think it's really a triad of what you're trying to do as a teacher with how, you know, the culture that you're creating for your students in the classroom. And then certainly other stakeholders like your parents, you know, they got to know what your mission is. I think it's a triad of everybody's got to be involved. It's about communication. And I think you've got to be open and upfront, you're letting them know that it's about coaching. It's a process, that there will be failures. There will be potholes, and there's going to be triumph as well. Because that's what your goal is to present some of that academic adversity and help kids learn, overcome, and then develop their own abilities, their own desires to want to succeed, because that intrinsic motivation is so much more powerful than extrinsic. So I think that is where the magic really is at. And so I think you've got to start with good communication, and then just, like I said, enrich a culture of ownership in your classroom by, you know, doing some key things. And I think it starts, like I said, with that communication. And then as you move kind of beyond that, now that they know it's sort of your mission in your classroom to really create student ownership, I think then you've got to make sure that your kids and you are actively engaged in a coaching mentality, meaning you're setting standards and expectations for what's acceptable. Like, for example, you do expect your kids to meet deadlines. You do expect them to take pride and ownership in the assignments that they're presenting to you. You want them to be proactive. And so you set and hold them accountable for those kinds of behaviors. I think that's absolutely crucial. So setting up sort of the behavioral side of what student ownership looks like, I think that's absolutely crucial. You know, making sure that you encourage them to be balanced human beings and to set up relationships of trust, not only with you and them, but also with their classmates. I think all of that sort of expectation and behavioral piece, that's absolutely important. You know, a lot of times, and I use this example a lot when I talk about student ownership, students will turn in homework, and if it's all crinkled up sometimes, if it's extreme, I won't take it. I won't. I'll tell them I'm not going to take this because it's on a wrinkly piece of paper. And they're like, what? What? Why? Well, the answer's all right. I said, I don't care. This is pride, not pride of ownership. And I expect that from you. So those are the kinds of things behaviorally you have to really make sure that you set your expectations for and act on it. You know, like I said, it's all about coaching, and we've talked about coaching since, you know, this podcast began, and I've told you how crucial I think it is in building solid relationships, teacher and student. I just think it's huge. And so I think the behavioral piece is where we start. And then we've got to kind of make sure that we instill some other practices. You know, we have to empower our kids. We need to actively seek opinions, get them to authentically buy in to what we're doing by empowering them, right? Why not seek their input? Why not ask their opinions? I think it's important. I think you have to do those things. I think you have to let them know that this is about growth and that there will be inevitable failures and successes. I think you got to show students that they're not only becoming better students, but they're becoming better people, and that they will succeed. They will succeed. And I think setting up that relationship with all kinds of approaches that we've already talked about, but breaking things into small pieces, you know, making sure that you're pointing out successes when they do happen, and being critical when you do see, you know, things that you need to be critical of. I think those are absolutely crucial instructional approaches and strategies. I think you need to laugh with your students. I think you need to be real. I do. I think you need to also make sure, as you're kind of encouraging students to be involved and be engaged with information, that you set not only the requirement, but the expectation that kids would want to participate in class. And look, when I talk about participation, I'm not just talking about talking, right? We always think about participation and talking. I think you know, in that situation, the people who love to hear themselves talk are going to talk the most anyway. I think you have to present a lot of different ways for kids to be able to participate in class, whether that be through writing or technology, which allows them to have feedback with equal sort of footing with those that sort of like to talk a lot. I think that's important. And so with taking these kinds of approaches where we're empowering and we're listening to kids and we're seeking their input, I think a lot of magic. Again, I know I've said that a couple times, but I just think that's where you want to be because ultimately they have to be invested in whatever the content that you're presenting to them or have them walking through. I think they have to be invested. And then again, and one of the hardest things to do is to build in sort of that how to put it, that time to explore, that time to engage, that time to apply. Again, the idea of essential questions is crucial because instead of dictating, well, we will go here and when we get here, we're going to stop the learning. Instead of doing that, I think we have to do a little bit better than that. I think we have to build an exploration time. Ask open-ended questions that are going to probe their knowledge and their understanding of what exactly they know, don't know, and what they've achieved. And then they begin to, again, become intrinsically aligned with the information that you're trying to present. And all of a sudden, you know, you may get answers and outcomes that you didn't expect. And by the way, that's a great metric of how successful you're being because, and again, regardless of what subject you're teaching, again, it's amazing if you're teaching a math class and you ask them to apply this or find some application and they find some cool application that maybe you didn't expect or maybe one you didn't expect them to come up with, that's amazing. And again, you learn so much more in that kind of environment. Again, it's about teaching a man to fish, right? As opposed to, you know, obviously the other choice where you're basically teaching them to hate learning. You want them to stay creative and curious and want them to succeed. So again, something that I think you got to think about. And what comes out of student ownership once you build in this application time and this exploration time and you set up this culture with this expectations on these expectations on behavior and you know the professionalism and then ultimately letting them know that you're encouraging them to explore and want them to reach that next level and find success at whatever level they're able to find success. Once you kind of get there, you're going to see amazing things. You really will, because there's going to be a few things that you're going to notice that are going to happen when you create this atmosphere of student ownership. One, as I've already mentioned, they may actually begin to enjoy learning. They're going to be proud of themselves. I mean, us being proud of them is great, and they need that, and they want that. But man, they may actually be proud of themselves. They may actually begin to love learning, especially as they embrace sort of this mindset of I can grow. You know, there's going to be failures, but I can succeed. You know, I can do this. I can get better. And of course, what we're really talking about, right, is a growth mindset, right? Where, as opposed to a fix, where I'm capable of this and only this, I don't understand this subject, I can't be successful. You can't live there with your kids, not if you want them to succeed. Also, out of student ownership, you know, as you create that culture, you're going to get kids that are resourceful. You know, they're not going to always need you to or somebody else to start them, you know, because they're motivated. They're naturally just more curious. I think that's important. They learn how to solve problems and overcome challenges. What we're really talking about is grit, right? They're grittier. And, you know, who knows what they may ultimately be able to change entire way that you teach a unit or change your classroom for the better. I mean, who knows? They could even change the system. You just don't know. And again, if you don't ever let them empower them to be successful and go beyond just the minimum standard of getting a standard or a benchmark, they're not really learning. And again, if you place kids at the center and you're setting up student ownership, they're just so much more apt to be naturally driven. And that makes sense, right? As opposed to me saying, you have to do this putting kids here at the center and then allowing them the opportunity to do that, that's just richer, right? That's just naturally more motivating. You know, and they're going to move beyond just being quote unquote busy, and instead being engaged and then ultimately apply and reach that level of student ownership. And that's what we really want. We want to move beyond just being busy and even just being engaged and having them apply, understand why they're learning and where they are in the learning process, and ultimately being able to overcome all of the ups and downs that are inevitably going to happen in an authentic learning environment. So again, I would encourage you to start asking the right questions, you know, stop asking or fixating on the wrong questions, and just focus on the why. Focus on exciting your kids, motivating them and empowering them, asking them to apply no matter what subject you're teaching. I'm telling you, and I'm going to say it again, that's where the magic's at. All right, well, that is it. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe, or buy the books on Amazon. It's always good to be with you, just like it was this week. I look forward to next week, and until then, I will see you down the road.